Howdy, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of Gear 30 on the Blister Podcast Network. As always, we are coming to you from our home base, an Elevation Hotel in Mount Crested Butte, Colorado. My name is Luke Coppa. I am the managing editor at Blister, and you can check out everything we're doing and reviewing over at blisterreview.com. There you can find all of our latest podcasts, read all of our latest reviews, learn about and get yourself signed up for our Blister Plus membership, watch all of our latest videos, and much more. Now, on that last note, for any fans of Gear 30, if you haven't been already, be sure to keep an eye on our Blister YouTube channel. Back at Blister Summit 2024 this year, we not only filmed a ton of excellent panel sessions with athletes, designers, founders, and other industry pros, we also filmed a bunch of videos behind the scenes where we covered a ton of the most interesting products getting released for the 24-25 season. And we often did so with the very people who actually designed those products. We've already published several videos from the summit, so to catch those and all the other summit and non-summit related videos we have coming down the line, be sure to subscribe to the Blister YouTube channel. For today's episode, Kara Williard and I sat down with Trygve Sande, who is one of the founders of our Blister recommended shop in Oppdal, Norway, Vertical Playground, aka VPG. Now, Trygve and the folks at VPG have been very involved in all sorts of mountain sports for quite some time, so we wanted to get his thoughts on some of the defining gear of the past, some of the most interesting gear that's out right now, and some of the products and trends he's excited about in the future. And be sure to stick around for that last topic, because Trygve talks about some very interesting work he's been doing with Hoji and the folks at Forefront this season. As always, you can find links in the show notes of this episode to learn more about Vertical Playground, all of our other Blister recommended shops, our Blister Plus membership, and more. With that, let's get to the episode.
All right, well, I'm here today with Blister managing editor and co-host for this episode, Luke Coppa. And we are here with Trygve, who is the founder of Vertical Playground, which is one of our Blister recommended shops. And this is actually not his first time on Gear 30. He has been here once before, and we will link to the original episode we did with Vertical Playground. But Trygve, thanks so much for joining us today, and we're excited to have you back on Gear 30.
Excited to be here. Thanks for having me back for another talk.
Awesome. Well, I know in that original episode we did with you, we talked a lot about Vertical Playground and the shop background and how that whole operation started and why it started, but maybe just give us a brief overview of sort of your passion for the shop you're running now and maybe how you got started.
Yeah. Well, it goes back to when I was young, because I'm like growing into an old guy now, I guess. But we were three guys meeting at high school with a shared passion for the outdoors and mountaineering. And so I founded the Vertical Playground in 2000 with my buddies Harald and Rune, which was also on the last episode. To start with, it was kind of a hobby. So it was the main motivation was to get gear at a better price and better gear. Internet shopping wasn't really a big thing. It was like hard to get the right gear back then, pre-iPhone age for the young listeners here. So the main motivation was to get good mountaineering and backcountry gear for ourselves and our buddies. And it kind of evolved into a job and a career for all of us.
That's awesome. Bringing it to fruition. And what is the meaning of Vertical Playground and sort of what do you specialize in at the shop?
Oh, the meaning of Vertical Playground, it's something... Remember, we were quite young when it was founded, so English is not our like native tongue, so we thought it might sound it cool at first, but for a Norwegian to say it every time he answers the phone, it was after a while more commonly shortened to VPG. But the idea was kind of to show that we were like set on the modern kind of outdoor activities in steep terrain and doing outdoors just for fun, which kind of was opposed to the traditional Norwegian outdoor activities with fishing, hunting, and picking berries like the main staples. It's kind of focused on the mountaineering and backcountry side of it. So that was the idea behind the name anyway.
Gotcha. Well, this will be a good conversation because we covered, as you said, this started a while ago, trying to find better products to have a good time out in the mountains. Now, bring it all the way to today, we're constantly trying to figure out what kind of trends we're noticing in the products we're reviewing and the brands we're staying on top of. But I'd be very curious from your perspective, across the ocean, where you are, have you, for this season, the 23-24 winter season, have you noticed any either trends with the products that are performing well or trends with the what customers are asking for?
I think like trends are more global these days, but certainly there are like different snow conditions, different climates. So there's always some differences in different mountains, not least. But I think like one trend we've been seeing this season is that freeride is back. For some seasons, it was just like free touring were booming so much that freeride like kind of lost momentum. But I think freeride is back, and also in backcountry and touring gear, more like downhill orientation and freeride is coming back stronger.
Yeah, I'd be curious from your perspective, like I feel like especially these days, the categories within, say, just skiing or backcountry skiing even are getting more and more blurred. So in terms of free ride versus free touring, maybe like, are there any example like skis or bindings or boots where like these people weren't touching them 2 years ago, but this ski or this boot or this binding has just grown in popularity this year?
Not really. I haven't really noticed that, but I think like maybe it's a bit different in Norway that freeride and ski touring was always quite linked cultures. So, but it was for a few years now, it was very strong momentum for people like discovering that lighter gear would get them like further and deeper into the backcountry, more vertical meters a day. And you could ski steep stuff on them. But I think just to have more fun and get out there for the riding is coming back to people, and you see more like more trendy. The wider skis are trending again, and people want to just enjoy the powder and the riding down a bit more when they're touring. Like, so I think always when you have a trend, the pendulum goes a bit too far. So it was like kind of a lightweight trend here for a few years, and now like you see it go a bit back, and the free ride end of touring is stronger, and like labeling it free touring, free ride. I don't know. I think that's, isn't that kind of a German thing to like put everything into very narrow kind of segments?
I know in our reviews, people latch on to one word, or it's just, I think it's just natural for us to be like, okay, like what differentiates these 2,200 gram boots from a 2,000 gram boot or something, and we're running out of labels.
Yeah. No, but you've seen also, I think, a lot of the like kind of beefier touring boots that came out, like the Atomic Hawks and XTD and similar boots have like been becoming heavier over the last few seasons, because it's going away from being just beefy free touring equipment to being more hybrid equipment. So I guess that's the trend as well. But also in the other end, like even when people are buying into wider skis, more freeride skis with tech bindings, you can see it's also like a kind of strong trend. I think it's the same with you, that people are putting really light bindings on pretty solid skis.
Yeah, I know reviewer Paul Forward has been doing that basically, I think, since tech bindings were invented. He's up in Alaska, so fat skis are kind of his thing, and he'll just send me pictures of like a 130 plus underfoot ski with a 200 gram binding on it. And while we can't recommend that everyone does that, it's definitely like, I feel like now people are kind of, Paul's not as much of an outlier in that regard anymore.
Yeah, no, but I think these things are really cool. And even though I think when you put like a 150, 200 gram binding on a pair of Renegades or like a really solid big ski, I think it's important that it shouldn't be like the one quiver ski for that owner. It's like a pair number two or three or four maybe. So, but when it's powder, it's a great setup. If you have to ski it on crust, it's not that cool.
Yeah.
Nice. Well, I know you just spoke to some of the trends you've been observing maybe this season, but as you mentioned at the start of the episode, you've kind of been in this industry and sort of tracking these trends and how they've evolved for a really long time. So let's just zoom out a bit, and I'd be curious to hear what you think some of the all-time standout products have been in the backcountry category. This can be just like across all time. Like, what do you really think were maybe some of those pivotal pieces of gear that have maybe transformed and, you know, led us to where we are today?
Yeah, pivotal kind of things. Yeah. Well, we came into the industry about the time when fat skis came into the industry for real. So that was pretty amazing. Then, of course, the era of tech bindings. Even though it's from the 80s, it didn't really catch on before in the early 2000s. And I think that was like the tech binding was one of the most important innovations to make ski touring easier and less energy consuming and to like get people further and to combine weight with kind of skiability. So you have to point at the tech binding. Then, and to me, my kind of favorite product within that genre is the Rotation 14. It's a binding I've been skiing since it was the Rotation 12, since its first iteration, and it's never been letting me down. It's not the lightest anymore. It's not the newest, but it's just unreliable. And we've been on many good adventures together. So that's still my favorite.
I'd be interested to hear, how do you factor like frame bindings into all of this? Like, do you think that was a good moment for sort of the history of backcountry gear, or sort of like a fluke moment? Or how do you kind of see frame bindings in their early stages as part of the overall trend?
My first ski touring binding was before we started the company. I had the older brother of a friend getting me a Fritzsche binding from the Alps. And we had to like mount it by hand without any jig. So it was probably not perfect aligned. So it kind of opened new possibilities. Telemark was the big thing in Norway at that time, so that was the normal ski touring gear, like with Scarpa plastic boots, and the Telemark gear was getting quite sturdy and good. But then ski touring came in the 2000s, and the Fritzsche frame binding, the Diamir, was pretty popular. But I can remember more than one time, and it's probably partly caused because of my mounting by hand, but it wasn't so aligned. So suddenly you were kind of involuntarily in a Telemark position mid-turn, or I had a few of those moments. So, but I was actually quite skeptic to the whole tech binding thing. So I wasn't like a very early adapter of that, but the first time I had the chance to really try it from a friend and borrow his skis for a ski tour, it was amazing. And I think it was more about trust issues than anything else that frame bindings had or moments in the spotlight in between, like after this binding was invented.
Nice. Do you have any other maybe standout products of all time that you want to touch on?
Oh yeah, I could of course like yeah, but I kind of before this made a bit of a list of products I really that meant a lot to me and that I really liked, and not necessarily the biggest innovations or the most important products, but apart from the from the tech binding, I think the rocker skis was a big thing. To start with, they just had an extra kink, like they had, it was actually fat Gia skis, and then you had an extra kink in the somewhere in the foreski. And I think when you get like the first skis that had more of a taper design and a gradual rocker, those were amazing. And the first ski I remember skiing on that really blew me away was, and still in my opinion, it's the first modern freeride skis. You might hold me up on that one, but from my kind of remembering, it's the EHP 187. The first EHPs were just normal, wider GS skis, basically, which all ski designs were based on back in those days. And then he had this 193 that was a really stiff ski with kind of a rocker tip. But the EHP 187, I remember like first time I tried that, it behaved differently from all other skis that I've ever tried in the powder, and it was amazing. And still skis that has a lot of the same kind of qualities and design elements as that ski had. So I think that was really, apart from the, of course, the Shane McConkey designs, I think this was like kind of the first one bringing it all together to a modern freeride ski.
Yeah, I know a lot of individuals that would list that ski on their list as well. It seemed like a pretty pivotal one for a lot of people. And I mean, if you look at many skis today, especially the modern forefront lineup, if you didn't know a whole lot about ski design, you'd be like, yeah, that's basically the same ski, even though it has been refined a lot over the years.
Yeah, totally. And I guess just to like finish off the whole touring, freeride touring setup here, I think and this might sound a bit dorky, but softshell pants. You used to have like super burly hardshell equipment, Gore-Tex Pro, with bibs and everything, and super sturdy, heavy stuff. And I think gear becoming lighter and easier to move and more packable, this makes kind of a big difference altogether. But to point at one of those things that evolved into a lot lighter, I think softshell pants is one of my favorites, and I usually pick that over shell pants for any touring day still. So the Dynafit Shoegarch softshell pant was really amazing for me, because it was kind of the first softshell pant I had that didn't look like mountaineering pant, but looked more like freeride pants, but was kind of very stretchy, comfortable to move in, more breathable. You don't have to stop and change layers so often. It's just easier and lighter.
Yeah, I'm a big softshell fan myself, especially like being based in Colorado. You rarely need all the waterproofing of like a Gore-Tex or any other three-layered waterproof breathable. Would you say that? But with that said, I feel like people get hung up on the fact that like certain softshell pants are not defined as waterproof. And I think they kind of like peaked a little bit here, but then died off and haven't really, like, there's niche fans like myself, but I don't think they've maintained that popularity here. Is that, would you say it's similar where you are, or are people more into soft shells like yourself?
Now, I guess it's a bit similar, but yeah, but no, they still have like a solid kind of following that use them a lot, but yeah, there's definitely there was a moment where it was the only ski pant for people, and it didn't like have the waterproofness or windproofness or whatever they were looking for, but for moving around in the mountains, it's just better most of the time. So
gotcha. Well, I guess I have the people of Norway to thank for keeping that demand and making sure at least some companies still make them. I think it'd be cool to talk about, like, we've been talking about all-time favorites, but maybe going a bit more specifically, curious about your thoughts on products that stand out for a few particular reasons. I think to start, you mentioned before that the Dynafit Rotation has been a favorite binding of yours, largely because it's just been so dependable. Are there any other products that stand out in your mind from either like reliability in general or specifically like long-term durability?
Yeah, definitely. With durability, I already mentioned the Rotation 14, of course, but also... in Optar, we have a local ski maker, Endre Hals, that makes custom skis, and he makes them from like hand-selected wood, no sidewalls, super controlled shapes with his that is CNC machined, and carbon layups, fiberglass layups, and I've been skiing his skis a lot over the last years, and they're just more durable. And now he's even found a way to like repress them when they get old and make new skis of old course. And so I think that's pretty cool with like well-built skis that are durable. Even no skis are bulletproof, of course. But generally I'd say like, To be honest, if you go 20 years back in time, people had less money and they had less gear, and the gear was more durable. Now it's lighter, it's more convenient, you can move more easily, but the durability, I think, still is important to a lot of people, but there was a time where all the backcountry gear were just bomb-proof, but also quite heavy and bulky.
Yeah, it's an interesting point, and one that, yeah, we obviously talk a lot about weight on Blister, its interaction with uphill and downhill performance, but yeah, durability is a huge factor too, and that's it's a good way to frame it, because yeah, I mean, if you were skinning on what was basically a fat GS ski, maybe with a little bit of tip rocker, odds are that's probably going to withstand a lot more than a 1400 gram ski that's super light wood core and some carbon.
Definitely. So, but it takes a toll on you also too.
Yeah. 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 I don't think I'll be going to find any GS skis at the secondhand store here to go skin on anytime soon.
No, there's a saying from the bike industry: durable, light, affordable, pick any two.
Yeah.
And I think that goes a bit for backcountry gear as well. And even when it's expensive, you can, when you go light enough, it definitely compromises the durability.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it might be pick one in some cases.
Yeah, exactly.
Moving on to another category, I think especially this season and the gear coming out for 2024-2025, especially on the binding side of things, we've seen several brands putting out bindings with the usual emphasis is on like in the touring category. It's light, it still needs to ski well, but I feel like there's a newer emphasis on ease of use, maybe being connected to the fact that ski touring, backcountry skiing continues to grow in popularity. You have all sorts of different people trying it for maybe the first time. So from your perspective, any products that stand out, maybe that have been around for a while or that have come out recently that seem to really hit the mark in terms of being easy to use, even if you're not a super experienced backcountry skier?
But at the end of the day, I think that that's the thing with the ski touring, that there's more compromises made than in just downhill skiing or free riding. So it needs to combine this very opposite worlds of going up and going down. So generally, I'd say there again, like compromises to be made when you say, maybe you could say easy to use, affordable and lightweight, pick any two, yeah. I guess.
Yeah.
User-friendliness has something to say, and from rotating the whole binding to just flipping the heel lifters, I think is an important innovation. And also, I know that a lot of people, and especially people that are new to the sport, are a bit put away by the step-in thing with tech bindings. And I know Dynafit's been putting a lot of work into that, and also other companies to improve the step-in feeling. But also one of my favorites when it comes to combining ease of use with pure function is the Hoja Lock. I think that's pure class invention. Again, from Fritz, together with Hoja, that invented the whole tech binding, that you have like this one lever that changes between downhill and uphill mode, but also does it in a very clever way that improves the whole flex situation and interface between the upper and lower shell, and just makes for a better skiing experience.
Yeah, that's a good example. I know I've had some reviewers testing out the new Dynafit ridge binding, which I'm super curious to try myself, but I think one of their lines when they announced it was you could step into it with your eyes closed. And I was very skeptical, but talking to our reviewer, Paul, who has been skiing it and really liking it, he's like, yeah, it is the easiest binding I've used, and he likes how it skis, which maybe you got to pick two on that one, and I can't remember what it costs, so maybe you can't pick all three, but it sounds like a pretty promising product in that category.
Yeah, I've been testing that as well, and I agree, it's a pretty convenient and nice binding and still light.
Talking about like these compromises we have to make, we, especially on the ski side and on the boot side, we often talk about kind of a ratio of downhill performance to weight. So not just what product is the lightest or what product skis the best on the way down, but what seems to do a particularly good job of combining and balancing the two. And we've had some products we talked about in the past, but I'm curious if any stand out on your end in your experience in terms of downhill performance to weight ratio.
Yeah, totally. You talked about the ridge binding, but lately I've been really, really blown away about the ridge, with the ridge boots. I think that's pretty awesome to combine a boot that's like between 12 and 1300 grams with pretty solid downhill performance. And that's been kind of a gap in the lineup for many. I think like a lot of the 1600 gram boots have like been heavier and more downhill focused, evolving in that direction over the years. And then you had like the 1200 gram boots that's been going down and push below 1 kilo, which is like a big thing, I guess, for marketing and
yeah.
And catalog weight and everything. And then it just left a gap there for a boot that's still really lightweight and effective, but that has solid downhill performance. And so I think the Ridge is the best thing to happen since the TLT6.
Yeah, we're very curious about that boot. I know when Hoji was at the summit, I think he skied the whole week in it. And I mean, he's a one-of-a-kind skier, but he was like bashing like hard pack resort laps in that boot. He is one of the most balanced skiers in the world. But talking to him about how they went about constructing like that tongue system that it uses seems really intriguing. And yeah, I'm very curious to try it eventually. I think Jonathan is planning on doing a Gear 30 with Hoji himself about that, so we'll have more to talk about for sure. But yeah, I think that 1200 1300 gram category is one that I'm super interested in, because the touring that I do, I'm like, I'm not going super super far, but I also don't want to be skiing in a boot that makes me ski completely differently than my alpine setup. And the fact that we can get boots with like 60 plus range of motion, degrees of range of motion, coming in at like 1200 grams, but you can still drive pretty big skis on them with a predictable flex pattern, I'm very stoked about that.
Yeah, no, me too, totally. And to make a Gear 30 episode with Hoji sounds like a good idea. That's going to be a lot of nerdy stuff out there for,
oh yeah,
for people who care about that. So
yeah,
do it.
Sweet. I think we'll probably close out the product categories with going more focused on the terrain and conditions that you tend to ski around Norway and Scandinavia. Obviously, as you mentioned, like the market's pretty globalized at this point, but I know there are skis that I love skiing in dry, light snow that we often get here that I definitely would prefer less if I went to somewhere that was a lot warmer and heavier snow. So anything that, even if it wasn't designed for what you tend to ski around there, any products that have stood out for the kind of general conditions and terrain you end up in?
Well, I think in Norway it's maybe more similar to like East Coast conditions in the US. More, it's coastal, but it's also like temperature up and down, bit windy sometimes. So sometimes good, sometimes not so good. To have like a bit of versatility in your gear, I think it's important here. So even though I said like initially that freeride is coming back and you see more people buying wider skis, the 95 plus waist category is still holding up as the number one. And I think it's just, if you want one equivalent of one ski for everything, that's the one you buy for all around Norwegian conditions, I guess. So, and apart from that, I'd say that the freeride touring has been a thing here for a long time, because the ski lifts are just not built on the most spectacular or coolest mountains. So to get into the cool terrain, you need to get there by yourself. There's no snowmobiles or no lifts taking you there. So
a lot of human power behind what you do. So we've talked a lot about standout products, mostly in terms of hard goods, boots, binding, skis. And then you did mention soft shell pants, but I want to get your thoughts on maybe how like other accessories have evolved in, you know, the decades you've been kind of watching this. And that could be anything from avalanche safety equipment to backpacks, or, you know, just like some of the things we're using out there on a daily basis, even just things such as gloves. So what are your thoughts as far as accessories and maybe how they've evolved, or some that have stood out over the years?
Yeah, where to begin? I think there's some gear hasn't evolved very much at all. I think a pair of like very well preserved and cared for leather gloves from Hestra is pretty darn good still, and very similar to what they were 30 years ago. But a lot of gear is getting, I think, also a lot of the accessories are getting lighter, everything from clothing to crampons. That has changed a lot. Like, they are so light and packable these days. You get skinnier ropes, you get specialized rope for glacier safety that are super packable for rappelling. So there's a lot of, like, the gear you bring is lighter, so your pack, you ski with a lighter pack, which is a good thing mostly. Or all the time, I guess.
Yeah.
but I'd also say one of the things that I think has evolved a lot and been and is more specialized now is ski touring packs. And I think I'm not alone about being quite nerdy about the ski pack, because at the end of the day, you spend a lot of time digging things in and out of it, attaching things to it. It's just like in the center of a lot of the transitions you do during any day in the backcountry. So to have, like, good functionality in a backpack is super important and quite nice when it when you, like, get to know a backpack and use it in a nice way, and being, like, interested in a bit of the more techie mountaineering side and steep skiing side of it. I'm pretty into the Blue Ice packs. So the Blue Ice Kuma pack is a favorite of mine. Really easy to attach your skis fast, to have the ice axe at hand at any time. And I also like to pack a rope in and out and have it ready both for small climbs or crevasse terrain or whatever. So that's one of the highlights for me anyway.
So to close out this talk of, like, standout products and trends that we've noticed in certain categories, we talked about bindings that have become easier to use overall, and maybe that helps people get into ski touring more easily. But thinking more broadly, like, we've been talking about all this gear, and we've also been talking about the fact that more and more people are interested in getting into ski touring in the backcountry. Do you have any thoughts on products or programs or things that people in the industry are doing that is kind of helping, not eliminate, because there's always going to be a barrier to entry, but helping the process of a beginner backcountry skier be a bit more manageable and easier?
Yeah, good question. And that's something I've been putting some consideration into, because it's quite expensive to get into ski touring, because you will need new boots, new bindings, new skis, and they're all more expensive than the bindings, boots, and skis you had before. And then you probably need avalanche gear and clothing. And so I think to, like, get people into it, and I think one of the really important things is to have rentals and demos so people can try before they buy and get out in the backcountry and see if there's something they like to invest into more, like, both time and money, I guess. That's why also Vertical Playground has put up a ski touring rental, because I think that's, like, an important kind of entrance port to the sport, which I'd like to see offered more places.
Yeah, I think it's, like, in addition to the cost, it's also, like, you have to figure out how to use all this stuff, and you have to figure out walking uphill with skis attached to your feet is not the physically easiest thing in the world. Like, both when I, like, ski toured for the first time and when I mountain bike for the first time, it's like, oh, this, like, I, you always see all the cool lines that people are skiing in the movies, but you don't see that, like, 90% of the time they're just huffing and puffing uphill. So yeah, I think being able to test it before you commit to thousands of dollars of gear is huge.
Yeah, totally. But then again, like, when people have to, we're talking about, like, investments here, there's investment in money, of course, and if you use your gear, that pays off. But what, in my opinion, always pays off is when you invest in vertical meters.
Mm-hmm.
So people should do that more.
Yeah, it's a good point. And I think you had a really, you know, important point to that. Like, even a few years ago, it seemed really hard to be able to rent or demo backcountry gear. And now if someone's able to just access that from a shop such as Vertical Playground and, you know, take it out for a day, obviously there's a lot of caveats about how to do that safely if you don't have the experience. But I think it's really excellent to have programs like that in place so that people can at least, you know, see if they're into this sort of thing. And now that people have options to actually go uphill without necessarily being in the backcountry, such as going up a resort. So is that something that people are able to do in your region?
Yeah, that's quite popular. Like, people have to work during light hours since we have short days in the winter, and people are touring with headlamps often in the ski center or like the more mellow mountains just to get out and stay in shape, but also to have the feeling of putting in a few good turns, I guess. So that's totally a thing.
That's awesome. Well, for anyone listening who's near Oppdal, Norway, you can check out Vertical Playground and get a whole setup for backcountry skiing and see if it's maybe something you want to do more. And I'm sure the guys there are all very experienced and are happy to guide you with some of that new gear. So I know we've talked about the past, present, we've talked about sort of long-term trends. Now let's turn a bit to the future. And I think one thing I'll mention is in episode 169 with yourself and Rune, we got to hear the origin stories of Matt Sturbins and Hoji and kind of how the whole idea of the Forefront Raven came together. That's a really cool story and one that you got to kind of play witness and have a part of. So I think that's a great story that people should tune into. But now thinking about some stuff coming up, let's talk a bit about some of what Forefront's doing and what you're excited about.
Since the Raven, I haven't really been involved with so much with Forefront and their ski designs. But 1 year ago, like, I had a good talk with Hoji when I met him in Italy, I guess, at some Dynafit event, and we talked a bit about the Dynafit Tiger 114. Which I co-designed, and we got into talk about what the next kind of backcountry ski in his line could be like, and we connected quite well again on that, and suddenly, like, he put it together, so got back in connection with their excellent ski drawer Bob Boyce and Hoji himself and Sam at Forefront, and we were throwing back and forth some ideas, and I had kind of a concept for a backcountry ski, and with some input from the others, Bob drew up that, and now we're testing prototypes for the new Forefront concept ski coming out probably next year, and I'm pretty psyched about that ski because it just skis so well. I feel really good when I ski it on good conditions. So fast, fluently, and it's part of the ski.
So for we'll be talking about the ski more going forward. And obviously it's, as you mentioned, you're on prototypes right now, but maybe you get to just talk a bit generally about kind of the how the idea came about and kind of what performance traits you all were trying to maximize or play with while you worked on this prototype.
Well, it's going to be a backcountry ski. So it's not like the widest ski in the range. It's narrowed down to where you can take it quite far when touring, but it's still like a ski that can free ride. And we wanted to build some more versatility into it, so it will have more side cut than you've seen in the Hoji series in the past, and even a bit of camber. So you still want a ski that kind of goes well in powder, of course, but also you want a ski that is more fun whenever you are on spring corn, on wind pack, or on crust. And still have like that kind of loose, surfy feeling that the Hoja series are known for. And to combine all those into one ski is quite hard, but I think we're onto something.
Yeah, well, that sounds like an exciting new development and definitely something for people to keep their eyes out for. Where is that project currently at?
Oh, it's, I think we have the shape is pretty dialed, and also like the profile, what you see from the side of the skis which we've been very particular with, is also like coming together. So right now it's more about dialing in the flex and the core profile. So
awesome.
We will be on time with it late, but.
Well, and I'm sure people will be anxiously awaiting it too. So that sounds good. Well, looking to the future, is there anything else as far as developments, things coming up, even just with not necessarily gear, or it could be gear related, but also with Vertical Playground and some of what you guys are doing?
Well, I think one of the things I see that people are kind of getting more particular about, and which I think is also one of the most important things in skiing, is the boots. So we've invested a lot in boot service. It's something we've been doing for a long time, but also something we've been like focusing a lot on lately. And I think to get your boots fitted is very much worth the money, and also like maybe to somehow during the lifespan of a boot to upgrade the liners mm-hmm. to an even better one is worthwhile. So to go to a good shop and get your boot fitted properly, that's a good investment. And you can do that several places, I guess, but we do it pretty darn well at Vertical Playground, if you happen to be close.
That's awesome. Yes, we cannot overstate that enough as far as how important the boot fitting process is and going to a shop and checking in with a shop like Vertical Playground to take your boots to that next level. And now, I mean, we're on the tail end of winter, looking towards spring. Maybe just speak a bit to what the summer looks like for you guys as well, and how some of this, human powered adventures translate to summer activities.
Oh yeah. Yeah. It's so good with spring, because then you get like a bit of everything with the ski touring still in the mountains, but the valley floors like melting down and having the trails uncovered from the snow and the cliffs ready for, and sunny maybe in the spring for some climbing is always good. So, and that's what we're most we're an all-round outdoor mountaineering shop. So there's trail running, but there's a lot of mountain biking and climbing. I guess that's the main activities, and whitewater kayaking as well. So that's what we are looking forward to. And talking about that, the new Rocky Mountain Instinct was actually launched yesterday, and we got it into the shop, and it was like one of the main attractions for the shop staff yesterday. So I'm pretty psyched on that as well now.
Yeah, it's that time of year where skiing's still super fun, but then we start to think about biking, and that sounds pretty good too.
Yeah.
All right, Trygve, well, it was a pleasure to have you on today. Super cool to hear about everything that Vertical Playground has going on year-round. And also, people should know that you guys have a pretty amazing online store, too, so they can check it out. You don't have to be in Norway to have access to all the cool things VPG is up to. But thanks so much for joining us. And we hope to talk to you again soon.
Thanks for having me. Always a pleasure to be on my favorite podcast.
With that, I will close out this episode of Gear 30. Thank you to Trygve and Kara for the conversation. Thanks to Justin Bob for producing this episode. And thank you all for listening. As always, please do your best to take care of both yourselves and everyone else. And we will talk to you again next week.